And now I'm joined on the line for part two of the book club by Sam Scott, who is a writer. And it's great to talk to you. Good afternoon to you, Sam.
Hello, Michelle. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So we've got a lot to get through. So I read this about you. On your 40th birthday, you said to yourself you were going to do something that year that you've never done before. One of them was to run a marathon and the other one was to write a book.
That's right.
And you did them both.
I did, yes. I'm quite a forceful lady in that, you know, if somebody challenges me or I put my mind to something, I will give it my best shot and carry it out to the best of my ability. And that's what I did. I wanted to do two things at that stage of my life to celebrate my 40th that I'd never done before. And I woke up in the morning and went running down the stairs and said to my husband, I'm going to run my first London Marathon and I'm going to write my first book. And he told me I was mad and wouldn't do either. But don't tell me that because I'll do it. And I did.
which is amazing. I was saying to the other presenter on breakfast this morning and he said to me, are you running a marathon? I went, no. I said, I've never woken up and thought that at all. I just barely get out of bed. Now, your first book, I hope I got this right, came out last summer, which is Sophie's Spirit and the Batting Manor. So where did the inspiration come for that book?
Well, for Sophie, I used to, my family and I, we lived in a 15th century house in Essex. I'm not going to tell you where it is for obvious reasons, but it was haunted and we had lots of paranormal experience there. We had mediums over on occasion and sat up all night with paranormal ghost hunters and investigators. And over the 16 years we lived there, I learned an awful lot about the paranormal world. So as a writer, you're told to write about what you know. So for me, that was a good place to start. And then the character of Sophie came about when I went to a Halloween party with my husband, and there was a young lady there dressed from head to toe in white with very white skin and white hair. And I just looked at her and thought she'd make a great character in a book. So the two things combined came together very easily to put that kind of person into a book.
Oh, what sort of things happened at the house that you could mention on air?
Nothing untoward. It was all very innocent and very playful. We were told that quite a lot of the presents were caused by children. Just things like coming down in the morning and your candlesticks would be placed upside down, or your clocks in the house, all of them would be put back 1 hour or 2 hours, and you'd put them right and you'd come down the next morning and they'd all be put back again exactly the same amount of time.
Yeah.
The alarm used to go off, even when the alarm wasn't set, the alarm used to go off at exactly 11 a.m. every Tuesday morning. and we would see and hear things that, yeah, you know, we just couldn't explain.
Wow. Now, you've got a second book, which is Saving Shringala, which was released last month. And then you've got Sophie's Spirit and the Tower of London Treasure, which is going to be released next month. And that's the third and final instalment of this trilogy.
That's the second instalment.
Right.
Saving Shringala is a standalone book, the one that came out last month. That's a book in its own right. Sophie 2, which is the Tower of London Treasure, is out in June. And then the third and final part of that trilogy will be out next Easter.
Okay, so what's Saving Shringala?
Saving Shringala is an adventure about four children that live in a foster home on the south coast, and they've all come to live in this foster home because of difficult circumstances that have occurred in their young lives, and they're taken on by Mary, whom they love, and as they grow, they all realise that they have a very special talent, each of them very different. They're not superheroes, but they all have one strange quirk, little ability that they can do, and poor Mary finds out that the foster home is due to close, but the children are taken by an unknown benefactor on the holiday of a lifetime as a treat before they go their separate ways to new foster homes. But there's it's all a preordained plan, and the children have been sent to save an ancient civilization in the Himalayas called Sringala that is under threat by one of its own. And, you know, it's a story of coming together and working together and, you know, achieving anything, you know, having great strength in teamwork and coming together and saving Sringala.
What made you want to write for children? And I know you've got a book coming up, which we'll talk about in a while, which is the teenage market. But what made you want to write for that age group?
I don't think I've ever grown up. possibly, first of all. I just think children are very inspiring. They see the world differently to adults.
Yeah.
You know, I think to children it's a much more colourful place. You know, they don't have any inhibitions. They're open to new ideas and lovely things. And for me, I just find it easier. I've always worked well with children. I always identify well with them. And I think I still somewhat see the world through a child's eyes, to be honest. So I've found it easier writing for children than I have for adults.
Now, I know you were inspired when you were younger by reading horror books, and you're a big fan of James Herbert, aren't you?
I am, yes, very much so.
And what would be your top book of his?
One particular favourite was one called The Cottage, which people might not know. Obviously, there's, you know, the more common one, Rats and things like that. But I did love one called The Cottage.
Oh, I don't know if I've read quite a lot of James Herbert, but I don't know if I've read that one or not.
Yes, worth a read.
Yes, I love a horror book myself.
We've got something in common. Not many people do.
No, I do. Do you know what? I tell you, one of the worst ones I ever read, Sam, was Misery. And I loved Stephen King up until that point. And then I threw that book across the room and I never read another one of his again. Because it frightened me.
It's a very strange story. It's quite a complicated story,
yes,
that one.
But, yeah.
A good read.
It's because they get, I think also with books, I know when you watch a film you can put your hand over your eyes, but with a book you see it so vividly in your mind. I mean, that's the way when I read. I know some people don't actually get pictures in their heads, but that's the way I get books when I read. And you really loved reading growing up, didn't you? So you spent a lot of time reading, which has really helped you when putting books together.
Oh, definitely. To be a writer, you've got to be a big reader. So yes, I mean, I do tend to stick to the same genres: a lot of horror, a lot of romance, and a lot of murder mystery. I'm rather partial to a murder mystery. Yes, if you can be well read, it will help with your writing.
So you've got a teenage horror story which is going to be released in 2023, House of 100 Doors.
Yes, that's right. I'm just about to sign the contract on that one tomorrow.
Oh,
so
wow.
This is a very exciting week for me.
Yes.
Yes, it's a new publisher, one that I've not been published with before. So that's exciting as well. Yes, it's basically about an ancient Gothic house in Pennsylvania in the US that was once an asylum where some very nasty things happened. The man that ran it was rather unscrupulous and did some terrible things to the patients. And the great-great-granddaughter of that gentleman is the current daughter of the current senator of Pennsylvania. And she gets entangled with a rather unscrupulous man who basically holds her hostage against the fact that her great-great-grandfather was such a nasty man, because obviously as the senator he's never wanted his family history to come out, he finds a television production company to put on a television game show with some children, sending them into the house to seek out a monetary prize. And yes, while they're in there, you know, looking for the money, having a competition, they don't know that our antagonist has a very a plan that none of them know about to steal the prize money for himself. Lots of very nasty things happen to them all while they're in the house.
I mean, listening to that, where do you get your inspirations and your ideas? Because you're not writing about sort of like the local area. You're going into the USA and different things. Yeah. So where do you get does it just come to you, the story, straight away, or do you have to sit down and really concentrate?
No, things just come to me. That one was particularly easy. I live in a bungalow, and through the centre of the bungalow there's a sort of a long corridor with lots of doors to different rooms off of the central corridor, and I just woke up in the middle of the night one evening and looked out my bedroom door, and I just thought, goodness me, there's a lot of doors in close proximity here, and just sort of took that into a larger scale for the house and designed this house where one room led to another, so it would disorientate the patients and they would get lost and things like that to keep them under control. So that was just the main story of putting together a large house with lots of doors and rooms and interconnecting corridors and things. And then, you know, research comes into it. Obviously, I know very little about the United States. So you're looking at maps, you're doing lots of reading, you know, all that kind of thing. Research comes into it as well. But lots of my initial ideas for things, and I'd say a high percentage of them come from dreams. Wow. I'm a very avid dreamer.
Yeah.
I have some of my dreams are like full-blown mini movies, if you like. Mm. And I've actually been in contact with a lady who's doing a PhD. She's a filmmaker in Swansea, and she's doing a PhD on dream patterns.
Yeah.
And I've been in contact with her recently, talking about some of the dreams I've had that I've developed into stories.
Wow. Do you know what? Sometimes I think, you know, are we dreaming now and we're awake when we're asleep? It's strange, isn't it? Because you can be in a dream and you're convinced that you are actually living and doing stuff at that particular moment. Very rarely do you go, I'm dreaming.
Yes, yeah. And you can actually, which I've managed to do over the years, you can train yourself to change what happens in your dreams.
Yes.
To try, you know, to wake yourself up or to change the ending or take yourself back into that dream if you want to continue with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting.
And now, if you could only own one book, and you actually put this as a question, which I think is fantastic. So if you could only own one book, what would it be?
It would be Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte, no question. I first read it as a teenager, and this is where, you know, it comes back to liking horror and romance as well. One of my favourite romance authors is Danielle Steele, and I think I've probably written everything she's ever written. They're easy to fall into, sort of lovely holiday reading that doesn't offer you any stress, whereas Wuthering Heights is a total contrast to those. Mm. It's in-depth, it's passionate. You know, Emily, all of the Bronte sisters, I was very fascinated with them as a teenager. But I took part in my Duke of Edinburgh's award, and for my gold expedition, a group of friends and I, we went trekking across the Yorkshire Moors. And we visited Haworth, where the Brontes lived, and we planned our expedition route so that we would go up to Topwithins on the Moor, which was the house that Emily used as inspiration for the Earnshaw family home. We visited the little bridge where the Bronte sisters used to sit, which is nicknamed Bronte Bridge now. And having loved the book, to see all those places was just such a wonderful eye-opening experience. It completed off my gold Duke of Edinburgh award to a high standard, it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. So as well as the book, you know, being a really, really wonderful read, it holds a very, very special place in my heart because of that.
Now, besides the writing, you're always doing stuff. You're mountaineering, abseiling, water skiing, and you're a personal trainer and yoga teacher as well.
Yes, indeed, I am. I'm a busy lady.
So you don't sit still then, Sam, at all?
No, no, very rare. I sit still when I'm in bed, Michelle.
Honestly,
when I'm in bed, I'm often writing or something anyway.
Or you're dreaming and getting stories coming through like that. So, Sam, if people want to find out more about you and where they can get hold of your books, do you want to give out all your socials?
I'm only on Facebook, so you can look at Sam Scott Author on Facebook. I have a profile page which is linked to my author page, so anything book worthy of mine, if you like to. I tend to put updates on about where events I'm doing. I've got some library readings coming up at half term around the county and things like that, so you can always find up and coming events on my author page. Little snippets about new book covers when I get them through, or anything like that, launch dates of new books. So they're all on the Sam Scott Author page.
Yes, I forgot to say, you go and you do readings as well, don't you?
Yes, I've got quite a few coming up. I love that, you know, especially going into schools, sitting down and reading for half an hour or so to a group of children. I find that really, really thrilling. And the feedback I've had from the children, they find it just as thrilling to have an author go in and read to them and talk about their work.
It's been fantastic to talk to you. You're such a go-getter. You've got people out there, if you think it's a sunny day, Sam will be out there doing something.
I will be.
Don't rest on your laurels. Take a bit of inspiration from Sam Scott, and you can do anything at any age.
Yes, indeed, Michelle. That's very, very true.
Lovely. Great to talk to you, Sam. You take care and good luck with all the new book releases.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for talking to me. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye. Bye.